It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. In 1989, five black and Latino teens in New York were indicted and then wrongfully convicted of raping a white 28-year-old investment banker named Tricia Mealy while she was jogging in Central Park. The five teens served 5 to 7 years in jail before being exonerated for that crime. Last month, they agreed to settle a civil rights lawsuit against New York City for a reported $41 million. Sarah Burns and her husband, David McMahon, along with Sarah's father, Ken Burns, made a documentary about the case called The Central Park Five. We screened the film at Micah's Brown Center in January of 2013 as part of the Maryland Film Festival WYPR Spotlight Series. After the screening, I spoke with Sarah Burns and David McMahon, as well as Raymond Santana, one of the Central Park Five. I began by asking Sarah to tell us how the Central Park Five were convicted of a crime they didn't commit.
Yeah, it's a terrifying story, and it's not an isolated one, I would add, but I think it's a particularly egregious example of how wrongful convictions happen. I think there are a lot of factors. One was that New York was a place that was afraid at that time. It was a different city than it is now, and I think that people reacted in a certain way to this narrative of the crime that was presented by the police. There are the coerced confessions by detectives, certain they had the right suspects and willing to sort of do whatever it took to get confessions. And then you have the media and a public sort of willing to buy this story of these kids as animals, as predators, without asking any questions, without bringing any skepticism to this story, even when there's no DNA evidence, no other forensic evidence, and these confessions don't actually make any sense. People just ran with this story and they believed it.
Raymond Santana, it is unimaginable for us to conceive of what it must have been like for you to have lived through this experience. Are you mad as hell? Are you bitter? How are you now, 13 years after this began to unfold, this story?
Well, you know, when you look at this case and you see how it played out, you know, if I was bitter, then it would be understandable. But what happened is that early on, we learned, the five of us, we learned that to be bitter, you know, can eat you from the inside out, and it can take you to the grave. And so what happened was that we decided not to be bitter. We decided to channel that energy and to focus into something more positive, which is turning the Central Park Five label into something that, you know, can go on and live on its own, you know, something more positive. And this is the reason why we decided to do the film, because back in 1989, you know, we were 14, 15, 16 years old. Nobody wanted to invest in us. And so we felt by giving back to the kids, this is how we invest in them. And so, you know, we knew that bitterness, you can't deal with that. You got to let that go. And that's how you grow, you know, by letting it go. And we know that there's something much more at stake here, and that's these kids. You know, these are our future doctors, our future lawyers. You know, one of you kids might do my divorce papers. I don't know, you know. I mean, you never know. You know, I might need you to help me some way, somehow. And so, you know, we have to take initiative, invest into them. And that's how we did it, by making this film.
That sounds right. That sounds good. But it also sounds remarkable to be able to actually do that and to actually not harbor, you know, real hate and anger towards the people, the many people who did this to you.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem that we really have is that at the end of the day, we can't move forward. You know, this case has been pending for 10 years, you know, as far as the civil case is concerned. And so it becomes very difficult for us to move forward and finally put it behind us and try to live our lives as best as we can, you know, because we're still battling this injustice. And as long as, you know, you have that, you know, it's hard.
David McMahon, you received cooperation from the Central Park Five and their families, but you did not receive cooperation from the police or the prosecutors. Did the reason they give you for this have to do with the fact that this civil lawsuit continues, or what? Why did they tell you that they wouldn't talk?
Well, to add to what Raymond said, the first time that they actually engaged us was by serving us with this subpoena for our notes and outtakes, but back up a number of years, all the way to the time that Sarah was writing a book, and she requested interviews with the prosecutors and police who were involved in the case, and they denied her an interview, and in some cases they hid behind the civil suit, saying they hadn't been deposed yet and had been advised by lawyers not to speak with with Sarah or with filmmakers or anyone telling the story. But in reality, I think that they probably couldn't answer the questions that we would ask them. And so therefore, you know, they elected not to participate, but they're not alone. We reached out to the media, members of the press who had written the sort of things that savaged these guys and used dehumanizing language to describe them in 1989 with no real curiosity about who they were, the sort of families they came from, and what their lives were like before this night. We reached out to Donald Trump, who spent 80,000 of his own precious dollars taking out advertisements in the four major dailies saying, bring back the death penalty. These were children. We don't have any laws where the death penalty applies to juveniles. And so there were a lot of people who elected not to talk to us, but the subpoena was another way they could keep the case out of the courts, and so that was the way that they chose to engage us.
On 88.1 WIPR, this is Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. That was David McMahon. We spoke in January 2013. He's one of the filmmakers of the documentary The Central Park Five, along with Sarah Burns and Ken Burns. I also spoke with Raymond Santana, one of the teens who was wrongfully convicted of the rape in Central Park in 1989. You heard them reference a civil lawsuit that the Central Park Five brought against New York City. Well, last month they settled that lawsuit for a reported $41 million.
Sarah Burns, you wrote a paper about this in college. It became a book, as David just mentioned, in 2011. Do you remember it when it happened in 1989? And how did you get involved? And then how did you garner the trust and the cooperation of Raymond and the other four young men?
I wasn't aware at all of this case in 1989. I was six when it happened. And I didn't live in New York. And so I first learned about it in 2003 when I was a college student and I was thinking about law school, and I spent a summer working for a civil rights lawyer. And he was getting involved in the civil suit, hadn't even been filed yet. And that's when I learned about the case, and I met Raymond and Kevin that summer. And I became fascinated by this story, and it felt like such an important story and one that I didn't know anything about. And it also fit with what I was studying in school. I was majoring in American studies. And so I went back and wrote my paper, my senior essay, about the racism in the media coverage of this case. But that wasn't the whole story. And I loved that project so much. I mean, it was such a fascinating part of a story that I sort of felt that I had to later on come back to it and try to tell the whole story. And as I started working on the book and doing interviews, I had to sort of become a journalist and started talking to the five and their family members and people who knew about the case and journalists, and sort of getting the human side of the story, the emotional side of it as well. I started to get to know these guys, and I think that they all, as Raymond said, were interested in telling their story and having their story told. And so they all agreed to participate basically from the beginning, but it took some time. Over the course of those years that I was working on the book, I think for them to become more comfortable about talking about this, to open up a little bit about the more difficult stuff. And so the great thing about having that groundwork, I think, was that by the time we interviewed them for the film, there was a sense of trust. And that is, I think, why these interviews that are in the film are so powerful and so open and honest and really moving, I think.
And Raymond Santana, I would imagine that that was a big risk for you as well. I mean, the police and the prosecutors were not the only people who wronged you. The media wronged you. So what was it that led you to believe that Sarah and Ken Burns and David McMahon would give you a fair shake?
You know, like Sarah said, we met back then, and you know, when she came back and proposed the book, nobody else proposed to do a book. And so we took a chance, you know, but as we got to know Sarah, you know, and Sarah did her research. She went and she found all these facts that always was there, but people just choose to ignore them. And so, you know, in our conversations, you know, she would point out these facts, and we was like, wow, this is exactly what we need. Somebody to just step up and tell the truth. And here was this woman who didn't have to do it. She could have went to law school and been a lawyer. But instead, she said, you know what, this is an injustice, and I'm going to stand and take, you know, I'm going to take a stand, and I'm going to fight. And we applaud that.
And David McMahon, where are the safeguards to prevent this kind of thing from happening again? Are they you know, should we have confidence that at some point they can rest with the police and prosecution, who simply will clean up their act? Or will it be with the media? Will it be with documentary filmmakers? Where is it going to be? Where can we turn for folks to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again?
Well, I think there are a number of measures that can be taken. One is that what you see in the film are these videotape statements that four of the five made. They were the product of 30 hours of intense interrogations. And so they had worked, after breaking the guys, to get a sort of script down that they then could tell to the prosecutor and have it be videotaped. That's what was played to the jury, and that's what sunk these guys. There was no forensic evidence, but it was too hard for anyone to understand why anybody would have given an account of a crime that they didn't commit and falsely confessed to it. And so what we need are safeguards to prevent that from happening. And one thing we can do is videotape interrogations from the very beginning. So when you bring suspects in, you turn on those cameras, and you roll right away, and then we know what went into getting those confessions. Another thing we can do is provide support for juveniles who are brought in. So they have somebody there looking over the shoulders of the people who are handling these processes and making sure that it goes well and that they're properly represented. And another thing is that we can have conversations at home to make sure that everybody knows their rights. So if they end up in a situation like this, they know, maybe I don't say anything until my parents arrive, until a lawyer arrives. I don't know how I ended up in this situation, but I know not to say anything until I'm sort of properly represented.
Filmmakers Sarah Burns and David McMahon directed and produced the documentary film The Central Park Five, along with Ken Burns. Raymond Santana was one of the Central Park Five. We spoke after a screening of the film in January of 2013. Just last month, the five men settled a civil lawsuit against New York City for $41 million. We'll have a link to more on that news at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. That's where we'll also have a link to where you can rent the film online. I'm Tom Hall. Much more ahead on Maryland Morning. Stay with us.